Alicia, when you began working at Douglas, how did you feel about doing the mechanical kind of work as compared to the kind of work that you've done before?
It didn't bother me. It just automatically came to me. Because when I was a kid, I helped my brothers make wagons. So that just automatically came to me.
You've done kind of mechanical things before.
Uh-huh. And everybody told me, even the foreman after they met me, that my hands. And he says, if you would have had an education, Alicia, he says, you'd have been something. You're mine. But I never had that kind of depression.
Did you ever think about going back to school at all?
I went back to school at night. And then it was pretty hard for me to keep on going to school and work. It got on my nerves. Take care of children and trying to work and get along with people. You have to have the nerve control. And I love people. No matter what nationality, I just love people. I have to be around people. Ever since I was a kid, I always had to be around children. I just enjoy them. I just don't feel right when I'm not around people. Especially since I worked at Douglas. I worked around so many men. They used to say, well, now you're working a man's job. You have to do a man's job, and they're going to treat you like a man. Well, you'd be surprised how a lot of men, you respect them, they'll respect you. And when I first started, I was the only girl in 133. That was the first ship we started, 133, after 51. Because during the war, it was all B-24s, fighters, low fighters. But to go to all different kinds of ships after 51. And I was, when I first started, I was just one girl in 15 to 20 men. And they treat me real nice, and I told them, I'll respect you, boys, and you respect me. I said, I'll do anything in the kind of work you want me to show me. I said, I'm willing to do, and I'm willing to carry my tools and everything. But only thing, one thing I ask, respect me, and I'll respect you. And I thought, oh, beautiful. They used to make fun of me when a lot of women started coming in, because I would sit right in the middle of the men, colored and white, to eat. And it didn't bother me because all we talked was about what we'd done at home, or what that night we went out, what if we had a blind date or something like that. That's about all we talked. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it.
Did you have many dates? Did you go out very much?
No. I never had time. Because when I came home at night, I had to see that my kids had to have clothes the next day. I always baked something for them to come after school and dance and have parties at home and study at home. They had something to eat, like cookies, cakes, or something like that, with the neighborhood kids, so my kids wouldn't be out in the street. Everybody from Hawaiian Gardens called me Grandma because I used to bake for them. And I used to say, all I ask you kids to dance, take your shoes off, and dance inside. And I got them a stereo. And I got them the records they liked, and they wanted basketball. I went and bought a basketball, and I put it in the garage for them to play, and we put cement all in the back for them to play. I never had trouble with the boys. And to this day, I can walk down Hawaiian Gardens, which is so rough, and all of them calls me Grandma. And everybody said, well, they're going to hurt you. They never have. Now, the only one that did steal my furniture, but that was out of town people, because even the boys from Hawaiian Gardens had asked me that they'd been different places to see if my things were there. And they knew my jewelry, and they would look and see if women or men had my jewelry on. So, you know, they wouldn't hurt me. I walked from Douglas Aircraft at night. I get home about 2 o'clock in the morning walking by myself. They never bothered. A lot of times, if one of the kids saw me walking, they'd holler, Grandma, what are you doing? I'm walking home. Wait, we'll walk with you. And they walk as far as the house. They're not bothered. But I work, like I say, a lot of the men now that lives at Hawaiian Garden, which they were leads and I was under them, they'd tell their wives, I've never seen a woman work like that woman. She put more work than a man did. Which I've always thought, well, they needed me when I needed the job, they gave it to me when I wasn't hunting for it. And I figured they wanted my job, so I done the right job. And I always tried to do a real good job and neat and clean so I wouldn't have to rework. I always thought it had to be really, we never had a very, once in a while might have to, maybe they wouldn't pass a rivet, or maybe the hucks were too short. It would be all mixed up and we wouldn't know it, and it would be too short. Then, a lot of times I would chop the heads, and my Barbie, which was my lead, but then she was my partner and then a lead, she would shoot them out, and we'd always work together, we were even. I wouldn't let her do too much, or she wouldn't. We were always doing equal, and everybody wanted to work with me. And most of the foremen wanted me to work with them. I can name one foreman that took me with him from 133 to clear up to the 8. That's when he passed away. And I worked in the huge lodge with him. I worked in the big beams. And one time I was working on the floors, and he thought it was too dangerous for me, so he took me down, and he said, I think that's a little kind of steep for you, isn't it? I said, no, high altitude don't bother me. I said, I can go ahead and do it. But anyway, he said, no. He said, I'll put you on the bottom of the ship, which it was nice of him. But he took me pretty near till I got to the IB. And then after Ringer, it was Mr. Ringer, passed on, I had O'Donnell and Farstead, and I stayed with them until I was laid off. I didn't lay off, I retired on kind of my back and my lungs.
Now, I think you told me that your job was that you were a Class A mechanic, is that?
I was a assembler, which is classified as an A mechanic, station mechanic. You had to do identically the same thing. But the only thing that I would not take the station mechanic was the responsibility. But I've done everything with the station mechanics. And the foremen would ask me, how come you don't take the lead? How come you don't take the station mechanic at 10 cents more? I said, no, too much responsibility, but I work with them. And I was right with them all the time. So they mostly classify me as a station mechanic.
Will you tell me about the strike in 1951?
We went on strike. A lot of them crossed the picket line, which it kind of irritated us. But the night that we walked out, because I was working at night, we worked until midnight. Then all the union started announcing that it was walking out time. So we all started walking out, and while we were walking out the gate, because the union would never interfere in the plant, they would give us slips that you go to gate 1, you go to gate 3, you go to gate so, and pick at certain hours. But a lot of times none of them would show up, so Betty Murphy and I would have to pick it around the clock. And Kay Holloway, we worked, but we had so much fun at the picket line that it even bothered us, because we laughed. We didn't argue with the people walking in. All we laughed and said, well, when we go back in, we'll see who and what. When we got in there, a lot of the band started putting the seal underneath the toolboxes, and if you leave them overnight, you can't lift them up. Or they would do a lot of tricks to them, a lot of tricks. So they finally got disgusted that they had to join the union and pay a fine. And we walked the picket line, I think from November, I think clear up to February, it was the strike.
Was that hard on you financially?
No, because yes in a way, because my dad was a very sick man. That's when he passed away, and it was that flood time when it rained. Oh, it rained. And the union helped me a lot. They gave I'd pick it a lot, and they asked me to go and help on the donuts and the dinner. I'd go. I'd stay overtime on the picket line when Betty Murphy and I and Kay Holloway and Barbie, we would stay over then sometimes 8 hours, plus 8 hours, to help the union when a lot of them didn't show up at night. And they were very good to me. They helped me pay my rent. Then they would give me a slip to go to the grocery store to get food for my children. At that time, I didn't have a car yet. They would furnish the gas if I went to help, you know, but like I walked to the picket line, a lot of times they'd go by and pick me up. Betty Murphy or somebody would go by, and we'd pick it together. It was rough at night, especially when it was cold, but we missed that because we never made the money that we missed. We never made it up. But we got what we had coming. But and then the union was very had been very good to me. After I retired, they still helped me. They came to the hospital, asked me if I needed help, I needed money. Every time something would go wrong with kind of the insurance, I'd call the union. The union would straighten that out, see that those bills were paid. They helped me a lot. So I got no complaints against the union because I belong to the AFL, belong to the CIO, and this WA 48, the last one. And then I was in a picket line too in 1943.
What was that like?
Oh, that was rough. That was at between Douglas, I mean Consolidated, and Ryan Aircraft, two aircraft. And it was on the beach in San Diego. And the longshoremen would help us because they're a real strong union. And if they were to come across the picket line, the men would throw them in the ocean. And that was rough. That strike was really rough. But they wouldn't let the women work at night on the picket line. The men better. But they wouldn't let the trucks go in. And if they did, they'd get the number and call the company, and they would get fired, or call the union, their local. So that was rougher than Douglas. But that stayed very short time. I think it was about 2 months.
Did they take as good a care of you as Douglas?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. As long as you help, they helped you. But if you didn't help, they after all, they did, just like we were working. But they were real good. And they saw that the food was delivered to the picket line for the people that was on the picket line. At night, they had their coffee and cokes all night long and all day long. They had fresh water all the time for the picket line. Oh, no. And then they were very clean. There's one thing the union told us, not to swear anybody that went in or hit their cars or damage something. To respect them, even if they did cross the picket line. When I was in the picket line, and Betty and Kay Holloway and Bobby, we never had much trouble because the foremen would go by in, but then there were the company men. Mm-hmm. But we didn't say anything. We'd say, well, you started in the union, didn't you? And they would laugh, and they'd say, well, we'll wait until you come in. And we never had trouble.
Did you ever talk to people who crossed the picket line?
Oh, yes. I worked with them. But I never said nothing to them. They didn't pay anyway. Because all you would do is just have an enemy. I got along with everybody.
Were you a steward at that time?
I was a steward not during the strike, in that strike. I was a steward at Solid Aircraft for AFL from... okay. 42, and I was sent from here over there. It was a 42 because I had to join their union. Well, I worked under over there and pay my dues over here. So I was in the two unions while I was at it. I how would I say, was from 43 to 45, or 44, just a short time, because nobody would take it. But I never had trouble. I talked to them, we'd go to union meetings, and took the trouble to the union, or if there was any misunderstanding between the foreman and the workers, I'd go and talk to the foreman. I had a way of talking to them, so it all seemed like I always got my way. They said I was a Mexican Jew. But I always talked to them, and before you knew it, it was all settled. We never had much trouble. I never did. A lot of people did have other stewards. Because a lot of times when I couldn't settle, I'd get the chief steward, and he would come and straighten that out. But I never had much trouble. Well, most of the time, when somebody stole my tools, or the foreman always giving me the lead's giving me the dirty job, or something like that, some silly, something that didn't have nothing. I wouldn't call it important. But then they said you had to go because they were a union.
Were you ever a steward at the Long Beach plant?
I wouldn't accept it after the strike. I would not accept it. I tell you why. Most of those colored boys were very good friends of mine, and colored girls. And most of their trouble was in there that they smell, they perspire. And I just couldn't put that complaint. I couldn't do it. Because I figured it'd be all dead, perspired in there. How do we know whether we smell too? But,
you mean they,
You know, what kind of person, when they were sweating, maybe you haven't worked, but when you're in a ship and you perspire and you're dirty, your body's with that dust and all metal, you do smell, regardless of how much you take a bath or how much cologne you put on, it still smells worse. I couldn't do it. Because,
people would complain about that?
Oh, yes. Or they're not dressed like the other. Well, a lot of us got money, a lot of them don't have money. I was a poor side that I only managed to go clean. Some people, you know, they don't care. Maybe their wives were working. How do we know where their wives were sick? I could not never do that. That's when I resigned union steward over there, consolidated on account of that. I couldn't do it. Because we can't all be perfect. But some of us have some kind of a fault.
Did the white workers find a lot of fault with the...
colored? The ones that came from Oklahoma, back east. Not the California people, like the old old people, you know what I mean, the ones that were raised here. No, mostly it was from people that didn't allow colored people in their town. That's where the complaints have come. But after they started getting used to it, I guess it didn't bother them no more. But I guess they had to get used to it.
Did they also have complaints about the Mexican workers?
Well, there weren't very many Mexicans. Because it seemed that the ones, most of them are from Mexico, the ones that are coming out. Most of the boys were all in the service from California. I met one little Mexican boy that he was from Mexico, had just got his citizen paper because he volunteered to come to the service. But when he crossed the line at the immigration allowed him because he was he had already served in Mexico there and have to serve over there before they come over here. And he had served his time over there, I think it was 6 or 7 months to get him over there for training. He then came over here and volunteered. And when he crossed he didn't pass the physical. So then he started going to school and working the aircraft. He couldn't speak very good English. He'd always try to work close to me, so I would translate for him. He lived in Placencia. Later on, he worked so hard and went to school that he'd become a foreman. He's just ambitious. He wanted to do something. But a lot of the boys had gone to the service, not like all my brothers went. Everybody. So there was just women. And old people, you know, older men that didn't pass that didn't go to the service. But they didn't see much of that.
You didn't have incidences directed at you personally, any problems?
No, never. Never complain. I never went to a foreman or I never went to a leader for complaint. I always patch it up one way or the other. They say something, I laugh it out. They said a dirty joke, I just walk away. If I lost a tool, I go to downtown and buy another tool. I never complain, never. If they want my job, I'm like, okay, keep that job. I'll go over here and get another one. But it didn't bother me. And the foreman, you can go right now to the floor of that plant, and the foreman, they're over there. I met two of them at the senior citizens here. And they said, well, whoever thought you was going to, I was going to be under you. And we laugh about it, but I never, even here at home, if I don't like something, I just get up and walk away. Or when my daughter and my son lost talking, it's none of my business. I just managed to go outside and look at the flowers. I'll be back, I'm going to store something. I don't like to interfere. Even when the foreman was talking to one of the workers, and I just happened to go by and listen to something, says, what do you say? I didn't hear, I'm hard hearing. I would never repeat it. So I get along real good with everybody, leads, foremen, people. To this day, I still have calls from girls that I work with, colored people from Compton. I have calls from Riverside, colored girl, ladies now, that they have retired and ask me how I feel and what I'm doing, and just we'll visit on the phone for an hour or so. And I'll say, well, next time it's your call, so you play the telephone. I said, okay, it's my call. I get along with it.
You told me last time that you married a second time. When was that?
I got married a second time in 44. I didn't stay very long married because he started using dope.
That's what you said. Where did you meet him?
I met him, it was a blind date. And at Cinderella Dance Hall at the Pike. And this girlfriend of mine says, that Barbie. She said, Alicia says, let's go to the dance tonight. I said, well, let me check at home. No, she said, let's go to the dance Saturday. And I said, well, let me check at home and see if I can straighten everything out before Saturday. If I can do everything by Friday night, so Saturday I won't have nothing to do all along. And I talked to my mother, I said, because I'm under her roof and I obey her. He says, do you do that yet? I said, well, Spanish people are like that. When you're under their roof, they're the boss. Regardless how old you are, they can slap your face and you can't hit back. And I said, I'll go home and find out tonight. I said, and I'll let you know by Thursday. So I worked and I managed to buy stuff to make cakes and everything, cookies for them. So I made a On Thursday night, I made a batch of cookies and I hide them. Friday morning, I left a note to my mother that where they were at, so give them to the kids when they came from school. And I told my mother, asked for permission from her if I can go to dance. And she said, well, don't forget to come home early because we might meet you or where can we get in touch with you if we meet you. So I told her, well, they told me it's Cinderella dance hall, so I guess we'll be there. I said, if I leave there, I'll let you know. And now we went over there and we stand down. She said, oh, I want you to meet a friend. Friend wasn't even a friend of hers. She didn't even know him. Only he wanted to talk to her for me to introduce her to him to me, so that's how it happened to meet him. And I just met him a short time and married him, but he was a very good man to my kids. Yeah, my children will tell you that I was nuts to leave him. But they didn't know why I left. Till one day, one of my brothers told him. He says, I was there. I found the stuff. I saw him using it. He says, and Alicia, your mom worked too hard to raise you kids. And for him to use that stuff and not to bring money home, I couldn't see it. So that's the reason. But he was a very, very good man.
What was his name?
Floyd Shelley. And he was from Oklahoma. His mother and dad just worshipped me, his sisters. But then after I left him, and he didn't have no money because I sold the house, and he was using that stuff, so he didn't have the money. I felt sorry for him. I wanted to rent a motel for him at Boone Park. And then one day I was coming from work, and I saw him hitchhiking. I thought, what in the devil is that guy doing a hitchhiking? I stopped. I said, where are you going? He said, oh, I'm just walking around. He said, I got no place. I haven't ate all day. And I gave him some money, and I took him to a rest, dumped him off in the rest. I took him, and right across the Douglas was a little, like a stand. I think it's still there. I sold hot dogs and what have you. So I dumped him there, and I gave him some money, and I told him, here, go ahead and meet me, and get a bus and go back, or get cleaned up. I said, look, he looks like a tramp. And he thanked me, and he said, well, wait until I get a sandwich, you give me a ride. I said, no, I'm too busy right now. I can't be bothered. So I gave him money to get the bus to go back to Anaheim, to Gwinnett Park. Then the following day, I saw him again. I called my daughter, Beverly. I said, Beverly, you're my helping hand. Come here. Yes, what? I said, let's take that man to the depot and put him in the bus, regardless whether he has clothes or what. So he was already, I think he was under dope because he was kind of dizzy-like, and his eyes were glary. So my daughter and I went to Anaheim Depot. We stayed there with him. We stayed right in the middle between her and I. And my daughter was the one that kept the conversation with him. Well, finally the bus came. I paid for that ticket. I put him in that bus, and I told the bus driver, don't leave him out until you cross the line of New Mexico. I said, then you can dump him off over there. And I turned around, and I gave him money so he can eat and get home. And he came back again. And he wanted me to go back awful bad. He went and told my cousin here in Whittier. He went over there and he told me, he asked her to call me, so I answered the phone. I talked to her. If somebody wants to talk to you. I said, okay. So I talked to him a few minutes on the phone. He said, gave me a high life story. I said, no, I'm sorry, but I had my share of it. I said, you just go back home and go with your family and they'll help you. Anyway, later on here, not very long ago, his sister wrote to me from Kansas City, Kansas, Yolanda, and asked me to help her. And I said, well, in what way? He says, you might be the only one that can talk to this man. He said, we don't know what to do with him. He has sold everything that mother had. He has put us down to a spot that we don't know whether we're going or coming. I said, well, I'm sorry. I said, but I had mine too over here. I said, I tried to help him. I offered to take and send him to a hospital. I offered to help pay him all the time he was in the hospital, give him a cigarette and go and see him. He didn't want to go home. He didn't want to do it. So I said, I cannot do it no more. Mm-hmm. So that was the end of it. I never heard from him no more. But I did suicide for him. Mm-hmm. I still suicide for my first husband. And he's here in Tuscadero. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been able to see him. But I write to him. I feel sorry for him.
What did his father do in Oklahoma City?
He was a farmer. Wheat. A very big farmer. They had a beautiful ranch. He had three boys. Yeah, two of them came out real good. He had five sisters. And they were all married. They were all nice families. And all the other family, his brothers were decent. They were very, he was the only one. And he said he got that, that's what the story he told me last. But he started using it when he was in Vietnam. He says, they give you that same dope